This is the Thin Space Podcast. My name is Evan Chasteen, and I have the honor, along with Jody and Larry Green, of speaking to Maria Kressler, the executive director of Ignatius House, for our third conversation. This is our third episode with you, Maria. I would say welcome to the Thin Space Podcast, but you have been welcomed. We have had several conversations so far, so welcome again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Always yeah. Wonderful. So we kind of talked about some different things for this episode. One of the things we mentioned was this idea of discernment and feelings. I think maybe the two go together as we talk about it. We can see how closely. I went through an exercise with my church at one point, the Sacred Listening book by James Wakefield. Mm-hmm. And every practice started with filling in the blank for I feel, and then you filled in the blank with your feelings. And so this seems central to Ignatian spirituality, paying attention to our feelings. Can you speak to that at all?
Absolutely. So that was, I think if you recall from the first episode we talked about, that was Ignatius's kind of divine revelation, where God showed him that was through his feelings and how he felt that God was most present to him and speaking to his heart. And I think that's where, you know, I think about feelings, there's a lot of different feelings, but he started to look at weighing those different feelings and recognizing the feelings that are long lasting feelings and feelings that move and change quickly. And so we can be, you know, we don't live in anxiety all the time. We don't live in fear all the time. Those are feelings that come, but the hope is that the feeling of the heart, the one that speaks to us most, is the one of love. The strongest feeling that the human person has is one of love, that's found in the heart. But I think when you start talking about discerning and making decisions, we're looking at our feelings. So if you're trying to make a decision in life, or there's different, you know, aspects, this path, do I want to leave my job? Is it time to leave my job? Do I want to look for something else? The call to using your imagination in that, spending time, one, imagine what your life would be like in going down X path. And as you use your imagination, you note your feelings. How's it making me feel? Does it get me excited? Does my creative juice, do I start to feel something alive in me? Or does it bring fear out in me? Does it create a certain level of anxiety? And there's a difference in our anxiety levels. So some of them are kind of, are there excited, anticipation versus an anxiety that comes from fear. And so when you can start to tease those feelings out and you're able to do that, you can start to see what spirit that's coming from. And that was really what he was saying. Sometimes you can get these happy, excited feelings. And that's the hard part. Because sometimes, is it because of what I want or is it what God wants? So I want that new job because I'll have a great new title and I'll be important, you know. So that could be one way of looking at that. And then you've got to pause with it and see where that sits with you. And so feelings are absolutely a part of certainly Ignatian spirituality. It's clearly part of our lives and how you look at how to make a decision, how to make choices. The best of us who are walking with Jesus are want to take those questions to Jesus, right? You want to take them into your heart. And as we've been talking, the only place to really do that and get into your heart is when you are taking it into the silence of your heart, because you cannot hear those things very clearly when other things are there. But he would go as far as saying, write them down, like take your journal out and literally start, describe one set, like I imagine I'm going to do X, and draw that out. What's it like getting up in the morning? I mean, he would literally have you start to look at every aspect. What would my commute be like? You know, how would my life get? I mean, all these things, how will I be with my family? All of them. And then put it aside and then do the same thing with the opposite. I stay in my job and these are the kind, and you do the same thing. And then you pray over them. You then take them into prayer, into the silence, and you sit with it. And then you note your feelings. Then the journaling is like, what am I feeling when I'm there? What am I feeling when I'm here? And then we hopefully, when you come to a freedom, a place of freedom in that, like when you start to rest in what does your heart really say, but it's also about shedding those attachments. We start to see what we're attached to at those same times in that heart space. So I don't know if that is addressing what you're thinking, but when you said the word discernment, it kind of kicks me off into Ignatius's way of proceeding, if you will, when one making a choice. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of that came to him. It was a gift to him and God in his own experience in his life. And so when he puts these exercises or these rules of discernment into place in his exercises, they came from a lived experience. And so then he, you know, and it's a gift to the world. It's a gift to God's children to kind of look at how God works in our heart. And yeah, and your feelings make a difference. That's where it happens. Yeah. But it's hard to note them. You have to learn how to note the difference between, like I said, that excited, you know, anticipation kind of feeling that can come, that can make you kind of anxious, but kind of an exciting anxious, and the one that comes out of fear, like you can feel your heart pounding and I'm not sure that this is, you know, what I want. And yet for all these reasons, it looks good. Right. And so why is that? Right. So,
Maria, that brings up a couple of questions. One is a statement. So in the last prayer exercise that we did in the last episode, you invited us to share our feelings with Jesus. And as soon as you said that, I've shared my feelings with Jesus before, but I've never been invited specifically to do that in that kind of a way. And that was really something. What would you say to people that are you know, more perhaps intellectually oriented or more mind-centered and less heart-centered? And how would you encourage them into what you were just saying about our feelings? Any thoughts on that?
I think typically when I have talked to what I would call, if you're doing the Enneagram 5 on the Enneagram, so people who are in their minds a lot, I often just talk about how do you relate to people? Who do you share your feelings with? Do you share your feelings? I would go to the human relationship first. And that may be the first question for someone who finds it hard. Perhaps that person doesn't. In other words, that becomes... But that's where the growth and the challenge comes. Like, how do you think of a person? Who's your best friend? Who's the person in all the world that you would like to, that you would talk to, who knows you? And I go there, that's where, because God's in all of our relationships. And if you could imagine that, being able to touch into those experiences. So you could be a real head person, but you're a parent, you're a child, you're a sibling, you've got relationships in your life, right? So you think about what it's like to share your feelings with, you know, and I would argue that I think people, even if you are in your head, you do have, you're having feelings. You have to just, they're thinking about their feelings. There's a sense of trying to categorize what they're feeling. And so there's a little bit of an analysis about the feeling and trying to let go of that a little bit and just saying it's okay to feel, you know. And sometimes, you know, there's that fear too, when you're in a head. I think sometimes there's a control thing when you're a head person, you're thinking and you've got a lot of control about things. And the minute when you enter into the arena of feelings, you feel it's a scarier place to be sometimes, right? Because it's an uncertain thing. I don't know how, if you've ever been in conversations where you suddenly can feel emotion welling up and you're not even sure where it's coming from. Like I can feel tears coming and I'm like, why am I feeling like this right now? Like something's happening. So it's a harder thing when I am a feeler by nature. So for me, when I would wish my husband was sitting here because I think he might talk more about how he started to tap into feelings, you know, and part of it, I think if I know him like I do, I think it's going to start to, we talk about relationships, who are the people in your life? You know, how would you talk to a friend? If a friend came to you and started to tell you about problems in their life, you're typically, head or not, you'll go to their feeling. You'll listen to them with your heart. Most of us will listen to a friend. And I always think that's fascinating because we can talk to we can help a friend through a lot that we can't help ourselves through, right? That's always been true. So that might be one way of making a connection to the feelings. I think we sometimes say, well, that's not who I am. So we get ourselves off the hook because I can't talk to Jesus that way. Or that's not me. And I'm like, yeah, it is you. It's there. God is in you. God wants you. That conversation's there. But there's something that there's an invitation. You have to be invited to it. And you are always invited to it, I want to say. But you have to be free. Silence is a good place to do it. No one's watching.
That's really helpful. Thank you. That's great. You're welcome.
So you mentioned something else there, Maria, that came up quite often. And I think it was an introduction to this concept in spirituality for me as I was going through this, these Ignatian spirituality exercises, which was attachment. And there's something St. Ignatius talks about as a healthy detachment. Would you mind touching on that for a moment?
Detachment. How do you, that's kind of healthy detachment, or the word sometimes used is indifference.
Yes, that's the one I was looking for.
And the word indifference in our culture and language today is like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. And that's not what Ignatius means. He doesn't mean not caring. It's being able to look at an outcome of something. So when I just described that discernment process and where, you know, sometimes like, how can I, in either way, if something were to happen, I had to accept something that I would be in, that whichever path you point me to, Lord, whatever happens. So sometimes I could be discerning, I want that job, I don't, and I don't get the job. So say I've discerned this is what I want to do, and then it doesn't happen. You know, you could sit there with your hands up and say, what is this, Lord? My feeling said this. You said this. How could that be? Well, there's an attachment to that. The indifference comes into when you say, whichever way this lands in my life, I am going to follow you in that. I'm going to trust that you have a path for me. And that's where it comes. That's where in the principle and foundation of Ignatius of Loyola, there's a, you hit a point in there, and he says, and therefore I will not seek wealth over poverty, success over failure, a long life over a short life, because all these things have the potential of drawing me closer to you. And so mm-hmm. the indifference comes in. So, you know, your first response to that is, of course, I want to pray for health over sickness. I don't want to be sick, right? Mm-hmm. And that seems kind of crazy, right? So that's a lot of people's reactions to this part of Ignatius's foundation, principle and foundation. It's like, that doesn't make rational sense. But what God is trying to tell us and what Ignatius is trying to lead us to is like, everything that happens to us in life, if we can sit in a posture of that and not be attached to the outcome. So we pray for healing. My mom was sick with cancer. When she got it, we prayed fervently. It was like, heal her, you know, miracles. You were praying for all of that. The question then comes into like, if that's not the outcome of the prayer, does that mean he wasn't listening to our prayer, or God is not saying, you know? So the prayer that I become very conscious of is, I know through whatever happens here, you will show me a path to you, that's what's being drawn forth in me. And so I want to be attached. And in the human level, I'm clearly attached to my mother and I want her to be miraculously healed. But I have to be somewhat indifferent to however that you know, lands. And so it's a difficult concept, because it almost makes you feel like you have to throw your arms up. You're like, so that we have no control. And the reality is, it's just about it's a posture, I guess I would say, more than anything. How do I stand and not be so attached? So let's just talk about what I'm doing with you all. I could get very attached to how I am being perceived and how I sound and what people are thinking of me, and get very caught up in, and believe me, that's a human thing. Before I began, I was like, make those kinds of anxieties could be there. Like, I want to be good for you in this process. So the level of anxiety they start to feel towards that is going to show the attachment that I have to something that's not of God. Like, so when I can let go of that and say, as we beautifully did, as we prayed together before, let it be, let you work through me and the outcome, you know, I'm not going to be concerned about what one is thinking. So it's those kinds of, it can play out in so many ways when you talk about what you're attached to and how it then affects your behavior and your emotional feelings and how you then respond to the world. So, anytime I used to get up before a group of people to speak, there's that part of you that, you know, your ego gets in there. Like, how do I look? How am I appearing? Are they going to be wowed by me? Are they going to love what's got to be said? And that becomes all about me. And so, and the prayer is often like, get me out of the way. Let me stand there in the presence and let you do, and not be worried about the outcome. So that's indifference when it comes to the attachments and the detachments and attachments.
I love that, Maria. And I just was, as you were talking, I was sensing God saying to me, Jody, I care more about the attachment you have to something than whatever the outcome is going to be. Like, I care more about those choices, the choice you can make to not be attached to things, more than I care about the choice you will make to do something or not do something. And it, and I'd never thought about it that way, that just how important that is to him, you know. And even in our, if you think of the journey we go on as Christians, I do believe we desire to become less and less attached, more detached. And as we do that, we do draw closer to him in that, because we're more dependent on him for everything.
Right.
I love that.
As you just said that, Jody, and I thought the word that just keeps bubbling up in me is freedom. That, you know, when Jesus, I've come to set you free, and it's free from the attachments that we have. You know, we look about free from sin, and certainly our sin can be our attachments. But I think there's that deeper meaning there, that the freedom to be, if we are ourselves authentically, and live in that freedom. And I think when I think of the people I admired most in the world, and some of that does come with age. Well, I think there's a certain wisdom to that. You'll see older people. How about when there's probably a lot of people listening that don't even know what I'm talking about. When you talk about the Red Hat Society, do you remember that? I think it was like in the 80s, where it was like, when I grow old, I shall wear purple. I forgot who wrote the poem, but it was this notion of like, I'm not going to worry about whether I match, what's the right color, what have you. I'm going to let go. I'm going to detach from. And I always thought it was funny, because it was like, as you get older, that happens, or you're like, you finally get too tired of the game of trying to do. And so the spiritual life really has just called us, like, you never have to play it to begin with. Right. But we get kind of swept in. And so many of us, as we kind of come in away into silence, and we sit where God meets us, and we start to recognize that, yeah, like, none of that matters to God. It's be with me, know me, love like I love you. I mean, and I think about the simplicity of it, and I think, wow, like, you know, that's all. And then that's all. Like, it's that small, and yet it's that great. And when you do that, it's not a judgment on anybody else. It's like you pray that everyone sits and can know that, and you want them to know that, because it comes in freedom. I wanted to share with you all this. Father Pedro Arrupe is a Jesuit. He had been the general provincial years ago. He's long since passed. But he wrote, and at least it's attributed to him, this, I don't know if you want to call it a poem or a little prayer, but he talks about just this, I think, this freedom that we would all be talking about. And he says, nothing is more practical than finding God. That is, falling in love in a quite absolute final way. What you are in love with, what seizes your imagination, will affect everything. It will decide what will get you out of bed in the morning, what you will do with your evenings, how you will spend your weekends, what you read, who you know, what breaks your heart, what amazes you with joy and gratitude. Fall in love, stay in love, and it will decide everything.
Wow.
And it speaks right to that heart and your feelings. And I love that it says nothing's more practical than finding God. Because when you find that, and then he goes, that is falling in love. Like, he's explaining that finding God means falling in love in that absolute final way. And then from there, it will flow and will fall. And once you can, you aren't attached, right? You become open to that loving. And I do think things like, what amazes you? What amazes you?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So there's these different areas. And I think it relates to something we talked about leading up to this podcast. So we've got our feelings, we've got discernment, and we've got indifference. And you mentioned this idea about knowing the difference between joy and happiness. And I think all three of those things play into this knowing the difference between joy and happiness. So yeah, what is the difference between joy and happiness? How do we know whether what we're feeling is joy or what we're feeling is happiness?
You know, Anthony DeMello is another Jesuit. I'm going to quote a lot of different people. He was from India. And I think what made him so interesting was that he had a lot of Eastern influence in his depth of his mystic. He was kind of like mystic. But he said, we're born happy. Happiness is there, is present. Unfortunately, our world starts to define what that should be. And we start seeking happiness in ways that so something like, how do you explain the excitement or the joy about, you know, some new item you've had, a new car, you're happy, right? You know, something happens to you and you're happy right then. But there's a moment, it's a momentary thing. It's something that can be situational at the time, that there's a level of joy, those words can be such interchangeable, because my husband would say to me sometimes, he goes, I just want you to be happy. And I might be going through a difficult time. And I'll look at him and goes, I am. What I'm going through is difficult right now. But at my core, I am happy. I am in God and I know that. So there's that. That's that point. That's where I think when Ignatius invites us to recognize joy, what amazes me, it is that deep sense of knowing you're loved. Okay, that's that level of so I can be in the midst of, I go back to my mother's dying, my father's, both of them, horrid times. Could I say, am I happy? I was miserable in the sense of my pain. But I'm telling you, deep inside, I knew God's love and I knew joy and I knew it from them. And so at the very same time that I was feeling not happy in our world, like I'm not happy, tears are flowing, I'm hurting, I was loving so strongly and so deeply at the same time that I wouldn't give up that joy of that love in a minute. I mean, I come to those kinds of life realities because I think that's where God is in the experiences. So I love getting a new car. When you get your new car, everybody goes, oh, such a love my new car. And we walk around, it's shiny and it's new. And we have that sense of, you know, that jolt of excitement, joy, if you want to call it happiness, whatever you want to call it, but it dissipates. I mean, it's not there forever, right? You've seen a great concert, and you've been with friends, and you've had this, and then it kind of settles, and you wait for the next thing to happen. I guess that's kind of, so whether you want to use the word happiness or joy, I think there are momentary excitements and I don't know, surges of good feelings. And then but there's this underlying piece that says, in the midst of difficulty, I can state to you in honesty that I am happy, I am loved, I feel God in my heart. So maybe the word happy isn't the greatest, although I loved when Anthony DeMello would point to the fact that you already are. It's your attachments and you're seeking those attachments that make you feel unhappy because you don't have these things. And so if we can, this is where it's indifference, if I can let go of that and I can sit in this indifference, then I will know the happiness and the joy and the love of God always. But when those things get in my way, and sometimes those things are disguised as happy things, right? You know what I mean? That's the, and all of that, really, you don't have time to even put those kinds of thoughts together until you can step away and be quiet and go, oh yes. My sister, just got out of the hospital from COVID for a week. And in a weak voice, we talked on the phone, and she's got four grown children, and one is Asperger's, her oldest. So she's got he's dependent on her. She's single. So she doesn't, you know, she's been divorced. So she's alone in that respect. And she's often been, you know, struggled. And she said to me on the phone, this is in a very weak voice, finally home, she said, you know, how scared she was in the hospital and alone. But what came to her and what she was sharing with me is, she says, Maria, she said, I just know that I have everything. I know I have family. I have the children. I have love in my life. And if today were the end, it came through trauma. It came through something that forced her into a silent solitude, place of aloneness. Now, so she didn't go off on retreat by any stretch. She's, you know, there's a suffering in there. But when I heard her voice, and it was the first time for me in a long time that I heard that kind of acknowledgement of, I am happy. Now she's home, bilateral pneumonia, struggling with breathing. It's hard. She's got a long journey ahead, but she said, I am happy. And I was like, wow. Like I kind of took breath. Like there was a knowing that, you know, I listened to. And when I hung up the phone, I was just moved by what happened in that experience for her. And so that's another way of looking at that. I can be in the worst place, but be able to go to a deeper place and say, you know, I'm happy.
Yeah, I love that you continue to bring us back to silence and the importance of silence in our spiritual journeys, in our journeys, and that these places of silence are where we learn more about ourselves. I think in the last episode, we allow ourselves to be known by God, and we love that self that we bring to God, and we accept God's love for ourselves. Do you have maybe some favorite stories of encountering God in the silence? You just mentioned the one of your sister, but do you have any that you yourself can think of, or that people have had at the Ignatius House? I know Jody, Larry, and I have all been to Ignatius House, and we've experienced the, there's a lot of words I could throw in right here, power, mystery, great love that comes with being silent in a place. So do you have any stories that you could share with us?
I've got far too many, I'm sure. But, and I keep thinking of them because they came in such different ways. You know, some were in trials that came in pain, that in the knowledge of love. So one that I share frequently is the one that in a contemplation with Jesus on the cross. So it was very similar to prayer practices where you take a gospel and you spend time in that gospel. I was invited in the gospel to go to the foot of the cross with Mary Magdala, with Mary, the disciple John. And I, as I was in my imagination, I'm one of them at the foot of the cross and I'm praying. And again, this happens because you're invited to do this in the silence, because you can't do this kind of prayer very easily just sitting at home. But anyway, in that prayer at the foot of the cross, I hear Jesus say to me, come closer. And my first reaction was no. And then I was horrified that I said no to Jesus. I was dealing with this conversation like, I don't want to, I can't, no. And I had to go back to that a couple of times, because then I was just distraught in emotion of my saying no. And then finally, kind of weeping, I'm like, okay. And then that was it. Like that was the closing of that prayer, and just not knowing where that was going to lead. But I'll be honest, there was a certain level of fear that was like, I just said yes. What does that mean? Where am I going to go? And then months later, when I went on retreat, and this was after my mother passed, so the first prayer happened while my mother was in dying of cancer. And then months after she passed, I'm back at the retreat center, sitting in the chapel, and I recalling what happened, my mother's death and the saying goodbye and that whole bit, when it suddenly hit me like a surge of, I said yes. And he took me there, and I could see it, and I could be there with my mother, and he was calling me to the cross with her. And I was able to see this love and feel this love. And the funny part was I couldn't tell anybody. Like I literally walked around the retreats and like wanting to like go, oh, Jesus, I answered yes. And now I see. I didn't see while I was doing, but I can see. And there was this power. I wept with such joy I wish I could, except for to say it was a surge of this great power that, and because of that, I will just close that with, when my father 5 years later was diagnosed with cancer, and very much like my mother, we were going down the very same path. I sat there with, I'm ready. I know you'll be here. I'm not sure why you're doing this again to me, Jesus. Like, I don't know what you're trying to do. And that wonderful quote that says, you know, is this what you know, if this is how you treat the people you love, you know, like how do you treat your enemies? Like, oh my gosh, I have to do this again. So it's those kinds of life moments when I knew it on experience of a depth that I promise you, I don't believe I would have, if I didn't take the time to sit in that quiet, that revelation, that surge of, I don't think I've ever had such an experience of a physical sense of it. Like I literally felt my body, like I was like crumpled and I just literally like exploded and in the sense of this awareness and then basked in that love. And I would always say, when you have those moments, savor them, savor them, savor them.
What a, I don't know the description, what an experience to have and to recall as you are able to be with people that you love in the silence with Christ and then in a very literal physical sense with your mother and father. Thank you for sharing that story with us. And at this point in the podcast, as we do with every episode, we've asked Maria to lead us in a prayer practice. We'd like to remind you that if at any point in time you would like to extend the silence in this practice, you can pause this episode and pick back up when you are ready. And now I'll turn it over to Maria, and she will lead us through a prayer exercise.
And so take a deep breath in, hold it, and release. And one more time, take a deep breath in, hold it, and release. As I sit here, the beating of my heart, the ebb and flow of my breathing, the movement of my mind, and all signs of God's ongoing creation of me, I pause for a moment and become aware of this presence of God within me. I ask for the grace to let go of my concerns and be open to what God is asking of me, to let myself be guided and formed by my loving Creator. How do I find myself today? Where am I with God? With others? Do I have something to be grateful for? Then give thanks. Is there something I am sorry for? Then I ask forgiveness. I remind myself that there are things God has to teach me yet, and I ask for the grace to hear them and let them change me. Remembering that I am still in God's presence, I imagine Jesus himself standing or sitting beside me. And I say whatever is on my mind, whatever is on my heart, speaking as one friend to another. and I give glory and honor to you, Father, Son, and Spirit, our God of community, our God of relationship. Thank you for this time. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Maria. You, I have loved spending this time with you. You're pure joy. I love that we ended on joy, because that's how I'm experiencing you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jody.
Would you just tell people about Ignatius House and invite people into this beautiful, wonderful space that we've all experienced and think very fondly of?
I always love to talk about Ignatius House. Certainly, you know, we offer silent spiritual retreats at a retreat center that sits on 20 beautiful acres on the Chattahoochee River. Interestingly, embedded in the middle of Atlanta, if you will. We're in Sandy Springs, which is right outside of Atlanta. But like I've said on the podcast, you're aware that the city is out there, but there is this beautiful heart that we sit in, this 20 acres on the with a mile and a half of trail that runs along the side of the river and then up into the hill. So we're on a pretty steep hill. We've got a nice overlook, a chapel that is all glass that faces the beautiful river. But our hope always is that you come so that you can encounter God. Our mission is to provide you with a place and a space to feed you, to care for you. You don't have to think about you have a private room and a private bath, which is always important. It's very minimal. It's just enough, because what you enter into is the grounds, nature, the chapels, the outdoor chapel, and the outdoor chapel that is nature and meeting God there. We offer any experience from a day to a one night overnight, two night overnight. We've got people who stay for 5, 8, and yes, 30 days. Some will come and do a 30-day retreat. And really fully enter into the silence and discernment. We welcome people of all faiths. One of the joys of silence and encountering God is that it's the God that you know and encounter in your spiritual life. And so we want people to know God, to encounter God, and then to go out and love as you've been loved and the love that you find there. So, just a beautiful place. And I would want to encourage, I thank you for inviting me to talk about Ignatius House, but let me just say to you, find a place. You know, we have a place. There are many places, but you owe it to yourself. I would almost say, you know, it's more important than just about any other form of connection in prayer, is to offer yourself the time to listen. And that is where you'll hear the voice loud and clear.
Well, I know I speak for Jody and Larry and myself and the Cloudwalk community, the Thin Space community, whenever we say thank you, thank you, thank you, Maria, for being on the Thin Space podcast. What you shared with us was a true gift and a joy. And we so appreciate you sharing your time and your knowledge and your prayers with us. If you are in or around the Atlanta, Georgia area, we encourage you to sign up for a silent retreat at Ignatius House. You can learn more about those and find dates and times on their website, ignatiushouse.org. I'd also like to say thank you to those of you who are supporting this podcast financially. This podcast is made possible because of your generous donations. If you would like to support the work of this podcast with a tax-deductible donation, you can do so on our website, cloudwalk.org/give. If you are unable to support financially, you can support us in prayer and by leaving a comment and review on Apple Podcasts. Those reviews go a long way in helping us reach new people with the love of God.